Dudes and dudettes, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming by. Today, I'm going to address a question that I get asked all the time. Many, many people will say to me, I have spent a fortune and hopped from one therapist to the next over a long period of time. How come none of them has ever talked about my anxiety the way you talk about it, Drew? Or how come nobody has ever explained this to me the way you have? Or how come nobody has ever told me that there is this approach to fixing this problem like you have told me? So I want to answer that question, not because I'm somehow special or I invented something or I'm great, but I want to really talk about why this happens so often to so many people, because it is incredibly common. I wish it wasn't, but there's an easy explanation for this if we really take a look at what therapy is all about and what the field of psychology is all about. Okay, so let's get rolling with that. But before we do, you know what I have to do. The book is called The Anxious Truth, just like the podcast, a step-by-step guide to overcoming and understanding anxiety, panic, and agoraphobia. It's 400 pages printed, 70,000 words. It's essentially everything you need to know to solve this anxiety problem of yours, laid out in a logical sequence as if you are taking a course on how to recover from an anxiety disorder. I am proud of how that book turned out. It took 10 years to write, a year to actually write and publish. And based on the feedback that I'm getting, it is actually the useful recovery tool that I hoped it would be. You can find it at theanxioustruth.com/recovery guide. So check it out. And if you've read it and you love it and you're using it, maybe write me your review on Amazon. I would appreciate it. Okay, let's get into this. Let's assume that you have engaged the services of a therapist, maybe multiple therapists, maybe many therapists, to try to solve your anxiety problem over some period of time. And you may have found that it hasn't really worked out the way you hoped it would. You still have the problem. You're still maybe stuck in your house. You're still having panic attacks. You're still living a restrictive life. You're still racked with intrusive, obsessive thoughts all the time. And you feel like, how come my therapist isn't fixing it? How come the therapy isn't working for me? And especially if you sort of stumbled upon the podcast or my books and you're in the Facebook group and you're seeing what's going on, you may be wondering, how on God's green earth did none of my therapists ever explain it the way this crazy dude on the internet is explaining it? Well, there's an explanation for that. There really is. And it's really not that complicated. It just involves understanding a couple of things. First of all, I do believe in my heart that every therapist really does want to help. So I know that there have been times when I have ranted about therapy and therapists. Even though I'm a huge fan of professional help, I know I have gone on the offensive sometimes and really, like, you know, had some strong opinions about different therapists and things they do. But I do believe that if you go into that profession and you become a therapist or a counselor, you do want to help. Nobody does that like for the money or the fame. They do it because they really want to help. So let's start from that premise. Your therapist or therapists really have wanted to help you. I believe that they have. Maybe they have not been able to, and maybe they haven't, but I believe they started off by wanting to help you and all of their patients. So let's get that out of the way. But what you have to understand is that psychology has different branches in it, just like medicine does. So if you have a medical problem, an actual physical problem, an injury, an illness, a disease, something like that, you wouldn't go, there's no such thing as just a doctor, right? So if you broke your ankle, you would go to an orthopedist to have that treated. Because an orthopedist is a special kind of doctor. Yes, she is a doctor, but she's a special kind of doctor. And she has special knowledge of, you know, how your bones work, how they're put together, what they do. And she has special knowledge of the techniques required to treat bone problems and injuries and fix them. You would not go to an oncologist if you break your ankle. You would not go to an orthopedist if you discovered that you had cancer. So we understand this. Everybody knows this. In medicine, doctors specialize. So they specialize in specific branches of medicine, treating specific types of illnesses and injuries and diseases. And there is no such thing as just a doctor. There are general practitioners and family practitioners. They are your first stop for, you know, sort of like your garden variety ailments. I have the flu, I have a cold, I have this or that and the other. But when you get to the point where you have a major issue that needs to be addressed, you tend to go to a specialist. We all know this. This is not a mystery to us. And if you had a problem with your sinuses, for instance, and somebody said, hey, you should really go to a gastroenterologist, you would think, well, why would I do that? That the gastroenterologist is worried about my stomach and my intestinal tract and things of that nature. Why would I go to them for a problem with my sinuses? You would know that. You would think it would be weird. And you would not go to the wrong kind of specialist to treat the problem that you have. Psychology is very much the same. So in psychology, there are different types of problems, and there are different types of psychology. There are different paradigms. There are different worldviews in psychology. I'm not going to get too deep into it because I'm not teaching an introductory course in, you know, paradigms of psychology here, but there are different types of psychologists and therapists and different worldviews. Some of the most common ones are there's a biological worldview. So there are biological psychologists that tend to look for the underlying physiology of our behaviors and our thoughts and our emotions. There are psychodynamic psychologists, and a psychodynamic psychologist, it comes from a worldview that was born, you know, out of the Sigmund Freud days. And in psychodynamic therapies, this is where you're continually digging, because psychodynamic therapists believe that just about every problem is caused by some root cause that's always hidden. So it has to do with the subconscious and repressed memories and things that you learned in your childhood, not necessarily traumatic events, but psychodynamic therapists are always going to be digging and digging and digging for hidden causes of your behavior, of your problem. Every problem can be solved in psychodynamics by digging enough so that you find the magic hidden cause. And that's sort of the kind of therapy that, you know, by default, we think of that sort of therapy. Psychodynamics. I have to find the root cause. So there are therapists that are psychodynamic in nature. They believe that that is the correct way to practice, you know, mental health intervention. That's the type of psychology they practice. There are psychologists that are based on a humanistic point of view. And humanistic psychology is generally based on a person's thoughts and emotions and things like getting needs and wants met. So if you've ever heard like Maslow's, hierarchy of needs, that is sort of humanistic psychology. So humanistic psychologists focus on getting your needs met and becoming the best version of you that you can be. It's very individualistic therapy. And in the end, what's interesting is humanistic psychologists will generally, of course, you know, there are no blanket statements on any of this stuff, but generally speaking, humanistic psychologists will reject the idea that science can be used to study human behavior, because they don't believe that we are necessarily scientific beings. They tend to be a little bit more governed by needs, wants, desires, emotions, and things of that nature. So that's humanistic psychology. And many of you may have been involved with people who are dealing with that. And that's the type of therapy that they would have given you. Then there are psychologists that specialize in either cognitive psychology or behavioral psychology. But really, you know, the difference between cognitive psychology and behavioral psychology is a little bit more academic these days. And those two worldviews, those two paradigms have really started to meld together, like in the last 50 years. That's why we call it cognitive behavioral therapy. So in cognitive psychology, we are convinced that it's really our thoughts and the way we learn and how we view our situation and how we react to the world that matters most. In behavioral psychology, in its most traditional form, you go back to Pavlov's dogs, and we have things like operant and classical conditioning, where the dog begins to learn to salivate every time he hears the bell, because the bell means the food is coming. Or that your behavior is basically governed by the consequences of your behavior, positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, punishment. So if you've ever taken a psychology classes at the undergraduate level, some of this is going to sound familiar to you. So essentially you have biological psychology, you have psychodynamic psychology, you have humanistic psychology, you have cognitive psychology, and behavioral psychology. And there are a few others floating around out there, but those are the big ones. And we are primarily concerned with cognitive and behavioral psychology, especially in the last 50 or 60 years, when those two branches have started to merge together. And that's why we call it cognitive behavioral therapy. So just like in medicine, where there are specific techniques that are most effective in treating particular injuries or illnesses. So knowing how to fix a broken leg, for instance, an orthopedist is the best doctor practicing the best type of medicine to treat a broken leg. Well, the same thing holds true with anxiety disorders. So if you are dealing with panic disorder or agoraphobia, OCD, social anxiety, health anxiety, the things that I talk about all the time in the podcast and that I write about in my books, the best therapy we know today, and this is not even debatable, it really isn't, is cognitive behavioral therapy. So you may have gone to see a therapist or multiple therapists over time, but really and truly, if you use the broken leg analogy, the most effective way for you to treat your anxiety disorder would be to go to somebody who specifically uses cognitive behavioral techniques. And sometimes, I would even just go so far as to say that this person is 100% committed to the cognitive behavioral view of human beings in psychology. Because what winds up happening sometimes is you go to a psychologist or a therapist who says, oh yeah, I do CBT, I do that. But as it turns out, they really don't. They're trying to combine multiple modalities. And what it comes down to in terms of effectively treating an anxiety disorder is you got to find a therapist who believes in their heart, right down to like the bottom of their soul, that cognitive behavioral therapy is the way to solve the problem of an anxiety disorder. What makes it difficult is that many therapists will try to take what's called a holistic or an integrative approach, where they want to pick things from. I want to pick some humanistic stuff. I want to pick some psychodynamic stuff. I want to pick some CBT stuff. And you know what? In a lot of instances, that's really great. That's not a crime. But when you go to a therapist that in their soul is primarily concerned with uncovering the things that happened to you in childhood, with digging into the relationship with your parents, with, you know, seeing if your needs are being met, some people just gravitate towards certain worldviews. That's normal. That's not a crime on the part of the therapist at all. So some people like Italian food. Some people like Chinese food. Some people like heavy metal music. Some people like hip hop. Some people like classical music. Some people like all different kinds of music. But we are human beings. And when a psychologist or a counselor is being trained, they are getting their degree or they're going through their training programs, they're going to be influenced, number one, by who their teachers are. And number two, they're going to be exposed to a bunch of different paradigms, and they're going to naturally gravitate toward one or two of them. This is just the way the world works. So for somebody who like is absolutely convinced that they can solve your anxiety disorder by helping you dig to find some sort of hidden root cause, well, that person is clearly seeing the world through a psychodynamic and maybe even humanistic, you know, lens. Like, they believe that this is the way to treat this problem. The issue is, it isn't. So when you have bounced from therapist to therapist and you have found that it has not really helped you and you're still looking and nobody has actually talked about the problem the way I talk about it, or no one has given you techniques that I have given you. And again, I didn't invent any of this. Like, if you went to a cognitive behavioral therapist who was absolutely committed to using cognitive behavioral techniques to solve the problem of anxiety disorders, none of what I say would be new to you at all. You would say, oh, you're just saying the same thing all the other people are saying. Correct, I am. I'm just saying the same thing that you'll find in dyed-in-the-wool cognitive behavioral circles. Like, this is that's what you would hear. So the issue, when you ask the question, why have none of my therapists explained this problem the way you do? Why don't they talk about it the way you do? Why didn't anybody tell me to do these things that you talk about? How come I wasn't able to fix this problem, even though I've talked to so many people over the years? You are just talking to people who do not necessarily believe that the cognitive behavioral approach is the optimal approach in terms of solving these problems. They may understand to a certain extent that you use some portions of cognitive behavioral theory to solve the problem. But when you get in the hands of a therapist who either completely rejects that and is 100% either dynamic or humanistic, or even biological, although you don't really see that often. If they're 100% committed to dynamic or humanistic approaches to these problems, then they're going to be incredibly ineffective. If they're going to be kind of humanistic in nature, which my own experience is, and again, this is not scientific, it's just my experience based on feedback, the most common is not necessarily dynamic, because the old psychodynamic theories are kind of not really holding water anymore. So modified psychodynamic theories, but more so the humanistic therapists will say, well, I know I got to do some CBT too. And they'll say things like, oh yeah, I have patients with anxiety. Yeah, I do anxiety. Or, hey, yes, we'll do some CBT. And I have a lot of people who will say, like, I don't know, my therapist said that he or she did CBT, but 4 sessions into it, like, I knew more than they did just from being in your Facebook group, they'll say to me. And then you know, like, okay, that's a therapist that was, certainly introduced to CBT, learned about it during their training, but never really decided that this is what they wanted to specialize in. And I don't believe that they have any malicious intent, nor would I say that they are incompetent in any way, shape, or form. But I think in mental health, in psychology, in this type of therapy, almost more than any other field, the worldview and personal beliefs and opinions of the practitioner weigh more than almost anything else in any other, in comparison to any other field that we would call, you know, medicine, helping, healing, whatever it is. What the practitioner believes runs rampant, rules the roost. And there's no sort of central body that would say, you know, if there was an oncologist that was claiming that that person, that he could fix broken ankles on a regular basis, you know, there'd be some consequences for that. You know, the governing bodies in medicine, the professional associations would say, hang on a second, dude, you're not board certified to do orthopedic surgery. You're board certified in oncology. Whereas in psychology, we don't have such a thing, at least in the United States. And I don't believe in most of the Western European countries. I don't believe we have that. So there's no professional or even regulatory function, you know, for mental health practitioners that would stop a dynamic, a psychodynamic therapist from treating an anxiety disorder. They may believe, this is a root cause problem. So I'm going to keep you in my office for a year and a half. I'm going to dig, and insist that you have some sort of hidden childhood issue that's causing this problem. Or a humanistic therapist that wants to keep talking about getting your needs met or being a people pleaser over and over and over and that sort of stuff, but never actually solves the problem of the anxiety disorder. There's no mechanism where that practitioner would be either called out or corrected in that. They are free to do that. And even though they might not be, you know, certainly intending to cause any problem or harm for the patient, they can keep that patient sort of stuck for a very long time, even though no progress is being made. Because I think a lot of the therapists are truly believe that they are doing the right thing. They believe that they're doing the right thing. You know, maybe that's the idea of like, well, I don't know why exactly, you know, this isn't working. Or maybe they just never confront whether it's working or not. I can't say because I can't get in the head of each individual therapist. But I do believe, to go back to my original point, that they all mean well. Everybody's trying to help. I do believe that. I do in my heart. I also believe in my heart that when it comes to these particular problems, a pure cognitive behavioral approach, or at least where 80% of the approach is cognitive behavioral, is really called for. It really is. Now, I'm not picking on integrative or holistic therapists. Integrative therapists will pick things from a lot of different paradigms and combine them together. But you can't, but the first paradigm in line, the number one ingredient in the soup, if you will, has to be cognitive behavioral. When it comes to an anxiety disorder, like all the ones I'm addressing, agoraphobia, panic disorder, that sort of stuff, when it comes to those problems, if therapy is a recipe to make soup, the number one ingredient in our soup has to be cognitive behavioral worldview and paradigm. It has to be. You could bring in some other stuff to season the soup. There's nothing wrong with that. But you cannot start from a dynamic or humanistic or biological perspective and then just sort of sprinkle some CBT in. That isn't going to work. So in a nutshell, that is the answer to why so many people bounce from therapist to therapist to therapist to therapist. Number one, we don't have a uniform mechanism, at least here in the West, where we can easily identify somebody who is absolutely committed to CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, or its variants, by the way. When I say cognitive behavioral, I'm talking about CBT, DBT, ACT. There are variants on this, right? And they're all good. But in the end, we don't have a mechanism that makes it easy to identify who those therapists are. They're out there. I know a lot of them now personally. They're becoming my friends as I get deeper into this project that I do. But they are out there, but they are hard to find. It is hard to find. And for some reason, you know, in the profession of counseling and therapy, at least in the US and the UK, from what I could see, UK is a little different because of the national health system. But in the same, at least here in the US and for the most part in the UK, we do not have a mechanism whereas a therapist who is primarily humanistic in their worldview has to say, hey, look, I'm not the best person for you. Many will. There are many, many very good therapists who would say, I don't really treat those things. I'm not expert in that. But you could call my colleague so-and-so. They're really good at that. We need more of that. We really do need more of that. The cognitive behavioral therapists tend to go, the best ones go all in, specializing on the anxiety stuff. And they're really, really good at it. And they're very willing to say, you know, you have some other things happening here. We need to call someone else in to work with them on those other issues. They're more likely to do that. Whereas the therapists who are not all in on the anxiety disorders and the cognitive behavioral approach will often say like, yeah, I can help you. Like, I haven't really had a long track record of like measurable, consistent success treating anxiety disorders, getting agoraphobics off the sofa, but I'm going to keep saying that, yes, I can help you with that. And I'm going to go down my humanistic or my dynamic paradigm. And I'll sprinkle a little CBT that I remember from my, you know, my undergrad or even my master's program into that. And I'm going to call that effective therapy when in the end, it's sort of not. And sometimes I think the therapist's worldview clouds their vision because they're not looking for that measurable improvement that we're always looking for. Like you hear me talk all the time, we got to make our improvement measurable. We got to make our goals measurable, objective. Like it's super dry. It's mechanical. It's almost behavioral engineering, if you will. Like that's been a, you know, almost a criticism that's been hurled at this stuff. But that's okay. I'll take that because it kind of is. But it's also super effective. Okay, so that being said, I do want to say that you can have more than one problem. So just like medically, you can have a broken ankle and a sinus infection at the same time. And you might need both an orthopedist and an ENT. Like you might need both of those people. That is absolutely possible. You may have one, two, three different issues happening, you know, in your life in terms of your mental health. That happens all the time. Some issues lead to other issues. Maybe you have had a traumatic past and that starts to bring some of these anxiety disorders to the forefront. But the point is, you can have multiple issues that we have to deal with, and we should deal with them all. And it is okay to know that, you know what, I probably need different therapists to do different things, either working at the same time, or first I'm going to try and get, you know, out of my house, I'm going to fix my agoraphobia for the most part, then maybe I'm going to get involved with a trauma recovery coach or something like that. Sometimes we need to have multiple therapists addressing multiple problems, just like when we have multiple doctors who are treating multiple injuries or diseases or illnesses. Like that's normal. That can happen. And it does happen all the time. So you have to be a little bit careful about just using the blanket term, my therapist. I mean, it's great that you have a therapist, but your therapist, and I don't care if you have the best cognitive behavioral therapist in the whole universe, there may be some issues in your life where that person is not the best choice to deal with them with you. Sometimes it's just about talking things out. Sometimes it's just about being heard. Sometimes it's about having that compassionate witness that we need. And I'm not saying that a CBT practitioner could not do those things, but the best tend to like stick in their lane. What I know is that the best of them tend to stay in their lane. I do this the best. And the best of them also will reach out and have a network of colleagues that they trust where they can refer you to somebody who says, hey, you know what? I think you should talk to so-and-so about this particular issue. And we could all work together. You know, we'll kind of make it all work together. That's the best thing that can happen when you're dealing with multiple issues. But therapy is not one size fits all. It's just not. So that is the, you know, 21-minute answer or whatever I've been going, 25-minute answer here as to why you may have hopped from therapist to therapist to therapist to therapist. And yes, you've spent a lot of time. You didn't get the results you wanted, and you probably spent a lot of money before this crazy dude talking into a microphone from New York started to explain things in a way that you have never heard before. So if you are in that category and you're wondering, how could it be that no therapists have ever told me what you're telling me, Drew? That's why. That's why. It's like, you know, again, I'm going to keep going back to the ankle problem. If you're walking around with a broken ankle for 3 years and you just keep going to other doctors and then you go to an orthopedist finally, and then an orthopedist says, oh, you have a fracture. Your right ankle is fractured. We've got to put it in a cast. You'd be fine in 6 weeks. Treats it very matter-of-factly. And next thing you know, it's fixed and you're back playing basketball or whatever it is. You would wonder, like, how come none of those other doctors told me this? Well, they were the wrong type of doctor. That's all. They meant well. They meant well. So that's why you were just at the wrong doctor for the wrong injury or illness. Well, how come none of those other therapists ever said some of this stuff? Well, you're just at the wrong therapist. That's all. They didn't specialize in this, or they weren't committed to this to the level that it takes. And I'll tell you, for people who specialize, for the counselors and the therapists who really specialize in anxiety disorders, and they go all in on CBT, DBT, ACT, the exposure stuff, the exposure and response prevention stuff, it is a difficult road. It is a difficult road when you know that you're going to engage in these type of therapies with your patients because you want to help them and you want them to get better. You know that you are going to put them in uncomfortable situations. And a lot of times, one of the reasons why, you know, many mental health practitioners are not likely to want to specialize or go all in on this is it makes them uncomfortable. And I can understand that from a human standpoint, I can understand that. There's a certain type of personality that says, you know what, I'm gonna tell you that you're gonna have to do some really scary and hard things. You're gonna have to work super hard. It's not gonna be easy, but I'll be with you and we can fix this. That is not an easy thing to say to somebody that is suffering, that just wants immediate relief. It can be distasteful. A lot of when there's research out there that has surveyed therapists on a fairly large scale and asked questions like, you know, why are you reluctant to put your patients through exposure therapy or exposure and response prevention? Why are you reluctant to do that? There's a really predictable set of responses for the therapist that will not go down that road to any significant degree. They don't feel comfortable, you know, putting the patient into any kind of distress, even though it's temporary and controlled. It takes more time. It takes more effort. It makes them feel a little bit, on a personal level, a little bit vulnerable. Like, if I make a mistake and something goes wrong, this is really bad. So I'm not going to use that technique. I'm going to use something else. So there's a lot of reasons why the best therapists that are most effective at solving the anxiety problem, these anxiety disorders, can be harder to find, and there are fewer of them. There are reasons for it. I mean, maybe that will change over time. I don't know. But it's pretty well studied, believe it or not. And some of the responses that you get that are trends, and you could see them across large response sets in terms of mental health practitioners, why those therapists might say, well, I know that it's the most effective way to do this, but I just can't bring myself to do it with my patients. That's a pretty common theme, like when you boil down some of the responses. So this is why therapy is not one size all. It depends on the therapist that you're with. I think we could be reasonably sure that all therapists start trying to help you. Their intentions are all good, but sometimes we're just with the wrong practitioner who's got the wrong approach to the problem. That's what that is. And unfortunately, in the mental health field, we don't have those regulatory or self-governing or professional, you know, kind of guidelines and I won't say disciplinary procedures, but we don't have those professional guidelines in mental health that say, oh no, I don't treat that. I'm sorry. I'm a psychodynamic therapist. Like, I can't treat you for that. We don't have that, unfortunately. So it leads to kind of a really murky waters, and people get caught up with the wrong therapists and hopping from therapist to therapist, and they don't get the help that they need. And it's kind of sad, but that explains it. That's why. Not because you're broken or you have some sort of special problem that no one will ever be able to help. That's not it at all. Or that you were with a bad therapist or anything like that, or a malicious therapist. You were just probably with the wrong therapist or therapists. So there you go. All right, folks, that's enough. 25 minutes. As always, I'm going to ask, if you're listening on iTunes or any place where you can rate or review the podcast, take a moment and maybe rate it or review it. Because when you do that, the algorithms kick in and more people can find it. And I spend the time that I do because I just really do want to help as many people as I can. So if it's helping you, rate the podcast, review the podcast. If you've read my books and you like them, review the books. And yeah, thanks for coming by. You know where to find me. TheAnxiousTruth.com/links gets you to all my stuff. If you want to join the Facebook group and ask questions and you're involved in the discussion, love to have you. Thanks for spending the time with me. Here's Afterglow by Ben Drake. That's Facebook.com/BenDrakeMusic. And I will see you guys in the next episode. Yeah, you're on your way. It's in the afterglow. It's in the lyrics of the songs we know. It's in these feelings that you never show.